I was talking to my dad on the phone this past week, and he and I got talking about grandma's house. That's his mom's house. We were actually commenting on how hard it is not to call it grandma's house. You see, it's not her house anymore. She passed away 2 years ago, actually around this time of year. And since that time, my aunt and her family have taken possession of the house, and they're actively remodeling it, planning on living in it. And so to respect that change, we have to sort of train ourselves not to call it grandma's house. But it's really hard because of all the memories that are built in to that place. Right? When I think of 6289 Marion Way in Centennial, Colorado, or if I go there especially, my mind is filled with, it's rushed with memories of that place and of my grandmother. I think about the entryway, right? You go into the front door, and right away there's this kind of odd glass case, a little piece of furniture, and inside of that glass case, a bunch of seashells. My grandma was obsessed with seashells. They were in that case and decoratively around the house. They're on the wallpaper in the bathroom and in the kitchen. My grandmother, every time she went to Florida, would collect and amass more seashells. My kids actually have seashells now as they've passed down. I think about the backyard in my grandma's house. She had a pool there, which was pretty awesome, and she loved to be hospitable, so she would throw parties all of the time. And so I think of all the faces that were gathered there, and I see the diving board and think about how my cousins and I tried to learn how to do backflips off of it into the pool. And I think of the raised porch where my grandmother would just sit and kind of take it all in. She'd be sitting up there smiling at us. I think about her front door. She doesn't have a screen, but has kind of like a gate. It's like an iron gate instead of a screen. And she would always be standing there whenever we would leave. And we lived 12 hours away from Colorado growing up, so we left pretty early. 5 in the morning, we're pulling out, it's dark out, but there's Grandma standing at the front door, waving us off. There was no place like Grandma's house. And maybe you can relate to that. Is there a certain place that you go where even just the architecture of the place conjures up old memories? Maybe a place where people in your life habitually gather, and so when you go to that space and that place, even if no one's there, you remember them, you think of them. You can feel the love and the warmth of those relationships. Well, what a gift it is to have places like that in our life. And what a challenge it is to see those people go, to see them change. That place for the Israelites was Jerusalem. It was their home. It was the place where, as a people, they built memories together and shared a life with each other and also with their God. And look, even the architecture of the place conjured up memories for them, conjured up warmth and joy. This is from Psalm 48. The psalmist writes, "Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God. His holy mountain," he's talking about Mount Zion, that's like this hill in Jerusalem where the temple was. "That holy mountain, beautiful in elevation, is the joy of all the earth. Mount Zion in the far north, the city of the great king, within her citadels, God has made himself known as a fortress." And then the psalmist later in that same psalm is like advertising for people to come and see this place. He's like, "I want you to understand what it's like to be in my home. I want you to see the beauty I see." He says, "Walk about Zion, go around her, number her towers, consider well her ramparts, go through her citadels, that you may tell the next generation that this is God, our God, forever and ever." Why was Jerusalem so significant to them? It was home. It was God's house. Within her walls, God had made himself known. There's no place like God's house. It was the place where God had made his physical presence known, his glory, like Aaron talked about last week, actually rushing into the temple and igniting it the day they dedicated it. It was a place where the Israelites had kept themselves behind the walls and kept safe from armies who were pressing up against it when it looked like they had no chance at survival. And yet again and again, God had come through for the people. It was a place in Solomon's day when the temple was built that nations came from the ends of the earth to bring tribute to Yahweh because of his presence and his power. It was a place of security, of confidence and comfort and peace for the people. But all that is changing. The people are headed for exile, and Isaiah knows it. This home is going away. Did you hear the lament in Isaiah's voice today? A voice says, cry. And I said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all its beauty is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades. Surely the people are grass. Jerusalem would be ransacked. The temple would be destroyed, and the people would be carried off to a land not their own. But wait, you say, Pastor, what about verse 1 and all that talk about comfort? And what about the double portion that they're going to receive from the hand of God? What about the way in the wilderness and the highway? I mean, isn't God going to deliver and rescue these people from their exile? You've been paying attention. I like that. And you're right. God is going to rescue the people from their exile. But Isaiah is lamenting something deeper. See, Isaiah doesn't see the problem as a physical location, but as a location of the heart. Sure, God's going to rescue the people and bring them back from Jerusalem, but how is that going to change anything? The people were in Jerusalem when they were already wandering away from God. The people had acted the same way when they were living in Jerusalem. Even if Israel is comforted and all flesh see Yahweh's glory, the whole thing isn't going to last very long. It never has, and it never will. That's the way people are. It's the way they have always been, and they always will be. Everything always falls apart. And so too in our world. We experience the reality of decay all around us, especially if you walk in that hallway on your way out. What was that, guys? Thursday morning, 12:30 a.m.? We saw a lot of decay. We saw pulp up to our, almost up to our ankles. The withering of what was. The home is sold. The loved one perishes. The new job starts to lose its luster. The relationship grows stale and hearts become hard. The kids grow up and they become autonomous and the parent starts to feel obsolete. The body moves slower than it used to. And maybe some parts stop working altogether. Nothing lasts. The beauty fades. And if that wasn't bad enough, the decay and entropy we see in the world all around us is a subtle reflection of something we all know deep down inside of us. That decay is not limited to the world out there, but it is also inclusive of the world in here. Isaiah is not making a commentary about what he sees in the world around him as much as he is making a statement about our hearts. That term he uses, beauty, right? Talking about beauty, fading the beauty of the people. The Hebrew term is actually hesed. Maybe you're familiar with that term, chesed. Say it with me. It's a fun Hebrew one. Make sure you sound. Chesed. Chesed. Yes. That describes to love. It describes loving kindness, a faithfulness. It's the same word for love that was the covenantal language that God used when he made this agreement with the people, when he said, I'll be your God and you be my people. And that love, that steadfast love that God had for the people was intended to be reciprocated by him. But Isaiah sees through to the heart. He sees through to our problem. Humanity's chesed fails. It falls short. It fades. Some of us are far away from home. All of us have felt far from the Father. It's the way that we operate. We exile ourselves into a Babylon of our own making. We demand our fair share of the inheritance, and then we set off to distant lights, seductive lights, deadly lights. We sell our baptismal inheritance and instead end up with duplicitous lives and empty relationships and inflated egos. And when the world around us starts to crumble because of our own actions, we feel stuck and we feel stumped. How can we know the way? But in the midst of Isaiah's lament, he utters forth a divinely inspired word. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. You see, it's not on human beauty, chesed, that these promises of God lie. Ada's baptism is not efficacious because Ada tries hard to reach God. But rather, God's promises in his love, our freedom, it's all wrapped up in God's activity, in his steadfast word to you and for you. For look, God fulfilled his word that he spoke to Isaiah. He came to the people. In 538 BC, he raised up what Isaiah would call a shepherd for the people, a guy named Cyrus, a foreign king who would come in and set the Israelites free, let them go back to their homeland. But when they got back to Israel, yeah, they were in the land that was promised, but they weren't in the promised land. When they rebuilt the temple of God, his glory did not enter it, and the people wept because God had a bigger plan in mind. The glory of God was going to come in a much more intimate way. The temple of God was going to have legs and walk around with the people. The glory of God was going to come down and live on earth. People would no longer be exiled, not because they weren't living in Israel, but because the promise of God's presence was coming to dwell with the people, even within the people. See, exile for the Israelites was real. It's historical. It's tangible and practical. But the point of the exile is that it points to a deeper exile, a distance that we experience from God's presence because of our sin. Our wasted, idle sins, our serious and deliberate sins. We have felt it too. We have all been far from home because of our exile. But we know that we have been brought back from our exile. How? Because the word of the Lord stands forever. Because the word of the Lord was made flesh. Because the word of the Lord was born and nursed and grew and taught. And his teachings still echo in our ears as we gather around to hear them and mark them and digest them. The word of the Lord became an exile himself. The Gospel of Matthew says, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. For 33 years, the word left the presence of his father and became an exile on earth, an exile even unto death, when he cried, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because the word made himself vulnerable to the reality of life and death. The grass withers, the flower fades, and the word made flesh was cut down like the grass. He bled and he died. And he rose again. And he lived and he breathed and he promised new life. Because the word of the Lord stands forever. My grandmother's house is going to keep changing. It's not going to be the same place that it was, and that stings for me. But the reason it stings is not because it's a house and a house is changing. The reason it stings is because of the person to whom that house and all those memories are connected. I miss my grandmother. I miss her smile and the quiet way that she listened to us. I miss her laugh and the way that she would energize a room. I miss her hugs and her card playing. And I miss her waving goodbye on the front porch. But she is alive. And I have to remind myself of that truth because Jesus is alive. Because the word of the Lord stands forever, the same word that covered her in her baptism. And we need to remind ourselves of this reality too. The distance that we feel, Jesus has bridged it. The decay that we see in ourselves, Jesus has paid for it. And he is making us new. You and I are no longer exiles from God. We may live in a land that is not truly our home, but our home has come to meet with us and to dwell with us. Because of what Christ has done and because of what he has given you. So, oh come, Emmanuel. And dear Spirit, teach us these things that we might live in the comfort, in the security, and the confidence, knowing that we are home in you through Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.